Don't just kill mold, deal with the root causes. Dr. Hart, what are the root causes of mold?
Yeah, that's a great question. So both Florida, where you're at, and Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, where I'm at, you know, we're humid, we're muggy, we're close to, you're close to water. Mold is everywhere. It's a common issue for people. And so what are the root causes with mold illness or biotoxin illness that people are dealing with? Well, number one, you got to realize mold affects us in three major ways. Number one, it's an allergen, right? You can be allergic to mold. That's pretty straightforward, typical seasonal allergies type stuff. But number two, you can have mold toxicity. Every mold produces mycotoxins, mold toxins. That's where it really gets nasty for people. We get into biotoxin illness or chronic inflammatory response syndrome and a whole cascade that happens there, an inflammatory cascade because the immune system can't get rid of it, a hormonal cascade in the brain where it does things like increases pain, anxiety, depression, lowers your urine or increases your urine output, so you dehydrate, all sorts of stuff like that. And then number three is when you get a mold overgrowth. This is like a fungal infection. A lot of people think a ringworm or like yeast infections on the skin or like vaginal yeast infections, but they can colonize in the sinuses, in the gut, in the lung tissue, inside the organs. And so it's really the root cause is the fact that you have to look at it those three ways: allergens, toxicity, and overgrowth. And most people, they're just hitting that overgrowth.
Yeah, we talked in a previous episode that the idea of the body as a terrain for pathogens to find fertile ground. Everyone knows that you've got that one friend that never gets sick and you've got another friend that's always sick. And yeah. I think maybe people chalk it up to genetics and or it's just in the stars. And what you and I always are trying to educate and get people to understand is our body's that temple that creates that environment. Now we can be more robust in our immunity because we have a healthier lifestyle. We've got healthier choices and diet and supplements, sun, exercise, etc. And that doesn't make the body a good environment for harboring mold-like illnesses. And you use the word nasty. That's exactly what I was thinking because yeah. It is nasty. The difference is, unless you have an outright allergy, like you said, unless we're asking why do you have the allergy, because sometimes your terrain is off, which is what leads to the allergy or the sensitivity in the first place. But aside from the pure allergy, you've got, like you said, the overgrowth. I was thinking of impetigo, which is more common in kids, but it can occur in anyone. And it's something we see a lot of down here. And the symptoms, of course, of mold we've covered before as well. But what do we do to make the body unfriendly to mold, to help get the upper hand so we actually clear the infection as opposed to bomb it with the pharmaceutical and have it just come right back because we're not treating the cause?
Yeah, I'd say, and my approach typically is number one, we've got to get the detoxification channels up and running. Because as those mold toxins and mold spores come in, your immune system, your liver, kidneys, gallbladder, all that have to be able to tag that and clear it out. So can you detoxify? Can you drain? Can you move it out? That's a biggie. And one of the things that happens for a lot of people with mycotoxin illness, this is a little bit of jargon here, but it actually epigenetically, so it changes the genetics of the cell to downregulate what's called NRF2. What is it? That all means basically your cells have a harder time making antioxidants and detoxifying. So you have to do something to shift those genetics, those epigenetics back in the right direction so that focus on detox and drain can actually work, get that junk out. So they've got to do that on that front. Another big one that I see that's really important is that we look at it like symbolically, okay? In my mind, symptoms are always symbols. And so what is mold? What is fungus? It's decay. It's rot. It's nature's ability to recycle things. Yes. And so in your own life, if you're dealing with fungal overgrowth or mold toxicity, what in your life is decaying? What's rotting away that you need to recycle and get out so you don't keep repeating the same pattern inside your body, right? So if it's happening in your life, it's happening in your body, it reflects. So what's happening on that front? And then third, in my mind, is work with the immune system to clear the infections associated, right? So we know you can have fungal sinus infection, but also mold makes it more likely to have staph in your sinuses, E. coli, strep. So help your body clear those, but then help your gut and your immune system build rebuild an immune tolerance so it can tag it and clear it instead of having this huge inflammatory response. Now, with that in mind, I was going to ask you, because what I see often with fungal overgrowth is because it's this rot and decay, it's not just opportunistic, but it's symbiotic. The body is using it to buffer a toxic overload of some sort. And one of the major ones I see is heavy metals. And so do you see certain heavy metals? I know you guys do a lot of mercury testing, a lot of heavy metal work. Air mineral analysis, I think, is how you test. What do you see with that? Do you see that with fungus?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how, you know, fungus reacts to the body's attempt to clear it. It's probably arguably one of the oldest forms of life on Earth, one of the most ubiquitous. You know, that mold's trying to get you to slow down so that you can lay down, so that you can die and feed the earth with mushroom. So
yeah.
If you get infected, it's not an ideal state. So I usually look at any immunodeficiencies. I always, number one answer is always remove the offending agent. So a lot of people have mold toxicity. They go see integrative doctors might be more focused on the mold and then forget, like, well, hey, they've been living in the same moldy basement, or they're occupational. So it sounds, and it is simple, but it's sometimes it's missed to really remove the offending agent, find out the exposure source, find out, like you said, what's weak in the immune system. But to your point, like a metal like mercury, you mentioned, it almost always has a compensatory candida albicans response, which I don't know anyone that's ever satisfactorily explained to me why. I think it's that it speaks to the innate wisdom of funguses in general, because how in the world would a fungus know to protect the host on that level? It boggles my mind. But
incredible.
That's what appears to happen when you get heavy metal burdens, you get a compensatory response. Now, is it that it's trying to digest the metal? Is it that it's trying to remove the metal? It's trying to process it? Or is it a consequence of an immunodeficiency which allowed the normal complement that we all have to become a problem? Or a combination of both, which makes it, I think, even more confusing why there's still some debate. But absolutely, it depends on the region of the country you're in. If you're in the desert, the molds out there are going to be very different than good old Aspergillus, which is everywhere in Florida. Some of the biotoxins, like you mentioned, that the toxicity in the biofilms might be specific to the particular bug. And so some bugs have just, you know, nastier biotoxins. So it takes a lower level of burden to get sick.
Yeah.
Others, you can carry a high burden. And then genetics does become a factor, because some people can carry higher burdens of one mold versus another. That's just sort of luck of the draw versus overgrowth, like you said, which is sort of a different state. And I think in a lot of ways can be tougher because of the age in the biofilm. I guess, let me ask you, what do you do in addition? When we talk about other things that might cause the physiologic state to allow the algae to bloom, the mold to bloom, the funguses to take hold, but what do you do in addition to support the body during that removal process? And more, here's a better question. In part two, subsection B, what do you say to allopaths who just give a drug like fluconazole and I don't know. That's all that I know what to do for you, Mrs. Smith.
So what we do is again systemic view, right? We're going to look at everything that's out of balance, like you're kind of saying. But a key on that front is, number one, is if it's in your environment, you need to know if it's in your environment. So you need to test, right? I love what you said there, is if you got to remove the offending agent. So you have to test and then get out of that environment. And so a lot of times, if I'm working with a patient and their allopathic provider, I'll go the data route, right? I'll appeal hopefully to their scientific and rational mind and say, look, here's the data on the house. Here's the labs we have that show, either mycotoxins in the urine. I do an OATS test that show metabolites of mycotoxins. Sometimes we'll do some thermography readings in the office on sinuses to show chronic sinus infections.
And which I wish I had.
It's a good unit.
That's a really great tool. We played with it when I was up there, and really great for imaging the sinuses particularly, but we talked about even catching early tumor growth that modern medicine misses. That to me is amazing, way underappreciated, way underutilized.
And good total body scan. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So we use that a lot to tell us, like, you know, is there lymphatic congestion or inflammation coming from the sinuses, et cetera. And so I'll use that data with them to show, and there's some also good labs like HLA genetics, where if you're mold susceptible, all the cofactors that go with that, like C4A, will show massive inflammation with the mold toxins and et cetera. And so we'll say, hey, look, this is what we're seeing. And then when you just throw an antifungal at it, here's what's going to happen. Number one, it's going to immediately start to create defenses against it. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's going to start releasing mycotoxins from your body because it's a defense strategy. The mold knows it's under attack, and it's defense strategy to increase mycotoxins. That sick person is going to get more toxic.
And whatever when the mold dies itself, it's spilling its own guts, which includes the toxins and other kind of allergenic.
Oh, yes. All the gunk. And like you were saying, even too, they can hold heavy metals in there. So they may be spilling that out. And so somebody who maybe was dealing with a minor heavy metal issue suddenly becomes a huge heavy metal issue. Mm-hmm. And here's what's really nasty is that we haven't studied enough. So all the azoles, right? Fluconazole, itraconazole, ketoconazole, all of those, they come from a family of antifungals, azoles, that come originally from a fungicide, Benomyl, which is massive issue in Florida, right? And so it's an agricultural fungicide that's created new types of fungus, mutant funguses that produce more toxins, are harder to get rid of. And so every time we do that, we're in general as a global problem, as maybe what we might view as like a holistic beyond your own self problem, you're contributing to a greater toxicity down the road to try to slowly eradicate this now. And so you're really creating a short-term issue, short-term solution with a long-term problem. And so on that front, you've got to go systemic. Are you still getting exposed? Can your immune system tag it? And then can we rebuild your immune system? So that means digestive, that means lymphatics, that means looking at spleen and thymic function and bone marrow and all that, innate immunity. So can we build that up? Can we clear the co-infections like staph, strep, and the sinuses, things like that, maybe deal with Lyme that's suppressing that? Can we deal with that? And then can we help the rest of the terrain detox, drain, support the hormones that are getting bashed, right? So we know MSH and VIP, those neuroregulatory hormones, are getting just destroyed by mold, which means that you can't think, your hormones are in the garbage, your inflammatory cytokines are going out of crate, you're going crazy, right? You can't retain any fluids, so you're dehydrated all the time and peeing like crazy, even though you drink water consistently, because all those hormones have gotten dysregulated. So we need to balance those to set you up to succeed. And then if it makes sense, only at that point do we do something antimicrobial, antifungal potentially.
Yeah, so you teed it up for the slaughter.
yeah, fatten the calf.
You know, one last point I want to emphasize is that idea of stagnation. So whether that's dehydration, low metabolic activity, low physical activity, poor nutrient in absorption or ingestion, it's just no different than stagnant waterway, right? Or a small pond, or that can get a lot nastier than the open ocean. So I found flushing, not just before, during, but after, can really help mold paradoxically, because it likes water, but we're mostly water. And this is more a factor of removing the toxins and like you said, pushing the lymph and getting it out of the body as quick as possible. So that as we decrease the load, the immune system gets the upper hand and we're back to our original state.
Yeah.
To a new, not exchanging one problem for another. So
that's the goal, is the minimal amount of solution with the maximum effect, so we don't create more problems. We were chatting a little bit off camera for a second about how you guys use, I think, maybe some UV and ozone or like intravenous silver, which can all be super effective with systemic fungal infections when you teed it up appropriately. Tell me more about that.
Usually, I mean, you could do that for all kinds of things. When I use it for mold, I usually look for antibodies in the blood. Because if the blood is showing antibodies, your gut is leaky, the IgA is there against candida or whatever, that could potentially be a deadly situation. That being said, you'd be surprised how many people are walking around with fungus in their blood. Like, I was not taught in medical school that was a thing, or if it was, you were end stage, you know, AIDS patient, because those are the only people that ever get mold. So if I see, you know, antibodies, it tells me the immune system has been working hard, and you do not want a fungal meningitis or you know, even a septic knee or anything. So the silver, both IV and oral, as well as UVB, the UV light therapy, and ozone, which was a mainstay treatment before antibiotics were invented. Let's remind people, really do a good job and help restore energy and power the mitochondria and ATP, because fatigue is one of the more difficult symptoms of a mold burden.
Oh, yeah. I think with that, it's so key, especially if you're going to kill it, well, anytime really, you want to start with a binder that works. Even today, like in my water bottle, you can see I've got some nice bioactive carbon. That's a great mold binder that I like to sip on every day, because it helps just if you're getting in contact, whatnot, you got to bind that junk up, because it's going to be in the gut. It's going to get in the bloodstream, et cetera. So as your body's processing it out in the gut, grab it up so you can get it out. It doesn't get recirculated.
Yeah, and feel better while you're doing it. So
exactly. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Hart, thank you for your time. We'll see you again next week, and click the link below.
Deal. Take care, Dr. Mark.
Thank you.